It's time for ER 101 with expert guests provided by the American College of Emergency Physicians. Here's Dr. Lee Vinoker.
Hi, and welcome to ER 101. We have a very interesting show today, and our first guest, very well known to the show, is Dr. Roddy Vukmer, who's both an MD, JD, and an expert also in infectious disease. In fact, for ECI Health Partners, he actually wrote out a strategy about Ebola, because Ebola has been in the news. There's new estimates that it's really underestimating the number of deaths that there are in West Africa, and everyone's in a panic. So welcome, Dr. Vukmer, and thanks for being on again.
And thanks for having me as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just read something that said the Ebola outbreak, according to the World Health Organization, is vastly underestimated. And I had read accounts of, you know, people in West Africa kind of in denial and burying their own dead so nobody knows it's occurring in their household and such. And while it is a huge problem there, people in the United States are getting very concerned because we live in a global society.
Well, again, I believe, you know, these are certainly concerning times. I believe that the phenomenon, and certainly in West Africa, where you know, they are really at extremes of resources and, you know, basically community health care, you know, the ability to get information out is significantly decreased. So I think the underestimation prediction may be, in fact, valid. You know, certainly here in, you know, more developed countries, we have a lot more resources and certainly availability for communication. But, you know, I believe that everyone doesn't need to be concerned and to perform the, you know, the, you know, sort of go with what you know. You know, this is a basic health risk that is a communicable disease, and, you know, using the resources that we have and using the techniques that we've used before.
Yeah, and I think people need to also understand that emergency departments are set up, whether it is Ebola or drug-resistant tuberculosis coming into the ER. There are protocols that every emergency room has to quickly identify patients that have an infectious disease problem that could be, you know, easily communicable and isolate them, correct?
Well, you know, you're absolutely correct. I think if you look at our standard protocols, and again, people are sort of familiar with, you know, the older term, which was universal precautions, and now we take standard precautions for every patient, not just the ones that have been identified with, you know, with a concerning viral illness. But if we look at a standard protocol, and again, this comes as much from the critical care sort of literature as well, is, you know, we look at various isolation processes, and if you kind of group those into three large categories, you know, you have airborne isolation, and this is, again, where somebody has a very, communicable disease that literally can be transmitted, you know, a significant distance in the air. And these would be things like, you know, TB and your old childhood viral illnesses, measles, mumps, rubella. You have droplet isolation, which is kind of what we think about when you have the influenza epidemic in the winter. And, you know, these are people that cough large-sized droplets. They typically drop off at about 3 to 6 feet and less contaminated, but, you know, still the same. And then lastly, kind of contact precautions, which, you know, we use for people with open wounds with Clostridium difficile colitis. The issue right now with the hemorrhagic fevers with Ebola is that, you know, at this point, the virus is truly not airborne. It is typically contact or secretion transmitted, but over time, any of these viruses, SARS, MERS, there's always the concern that they sort of morph or mutate to a more airborne virus, and that really is the concern and why we should use cautions.
Well, and you bring up a great point, and I want to get back to that, that it isn't that easy to transmit Ebola. But let's first just talk a little bit about, you know, what Ebola is, and then we can get into, you know, why it doesn't spread as easy as the flu.
Sure. And it's really interesting. I mean, there are people that are true infectious disease specialists, and, you know, they spend careers studying these and other viruses. You know, this originated, you know, approximately 25 years ago. You know, there was a central base in, again, tropical Africa, you know, kind of in the central equatorial part of the country. You know, there have been variants before that have been sort of, you know, sort of transmitted with, there was a porcine variant that was milder. There was a, you know, there were some laboratory simian specimens, some monkeys that actually had the disease, but these were kind of milder versions. Over time, it really has morphed into, you know, one of the more virulent pathogens that we've seen in recent history. It's you know, it's almost like a TV movie with outbreak or contagion. And what had happened in these very isolated areas was that the virulence of the organism was so high, it literally killed the host. So the transmission actually dropped off because, you know, people just weren't able to get around, and, you know, the actual bodily effects were, you know, were pretty stunning, and, you know, it really kind of, people almost self-isolated themselves. Now the organism has kind of bridled that back a bit, and it actually is less virulent. You know, it's, you know, the mortality rate is somewhere between 50% and 90%, and most people think it's about in the 60% range now. So, you know, the situation is it's actually a little bit more transmissible right now as it becomes less prone to kill the host, which is typically the way viruses will mutate or morph.
Yeah, and that is an interesting point. If you had a virus that was 100% fatal, you know, it can't spread. Viruses have to live pretty much inside of something living. So that's an interesting thing. But I think people are very afraid that there'll be someone sitting on a plane next to them that has it and doesn't know about it. And can you kind of allay those fears that really the transmission, you have to be almost symptomatic and kind of bleeding on them before they can really catch it from you?
Well, again, you know, the screening that we use now is if people actually have, you know, direct contact, unprotected with blood, other body secretions, typically, you know, a lot of contact with a lot of bodily, you know, sort of secretion. So that typically wouldn't happen in a sort of a casual encounter. But again, as time goes on, I mean, certainly people need to be careful. You know, even in a closed space on a plane, people are concerned because of, again, a closed air circulation system. You know, the lavatory system is a pretty focused type event. So at this point in time, I think people need to use the standard precautions that they'd know. You know, you need to, you know, avoid situations that you would put yourself at obvious risk, a lot of hand washing, and again, you know, the standard self-protective behaviors that we would use in a bad flu season.
Mm-hmm. And it is one of the hemorrhagic fevers. So the symptoms, what are the symptoms that people need to be, you know, to watch out for?
Well, again, you know, when patients actually have a presentation that has been confirmed, you know, they typically have, again, almost a, you know, again, a bad influenza type presentation. Typically, the temperature is elevated, greater than 101, we tell patients, or over 38.5, and then they have typical sort of flu symptoms, headache, a lot of joint and muscle ache, vomiting, diarrhea, stomach pain, that sort of thing. And again, once they transition into that sort of form, it's important to note that in contradistinction to other viruses, people typically aren't infectious prior to actual disease presentation. So in this one, until you actually get sick, you typically are not able to sort of pass on the virus to others. But, you know, again, this information is changing every day. We need to use good, hard, standard precautions, you know, even with some of these recommendations. So the point is people present like they've got the bad flu, muscle aches. And then once that occurs, then this virus, as typical with most of these hemorrhagic fevers, is they have external and internal bleeding that really is, you know, quite striking for patients and families and healthcare providers.
Yeah, and I think that we've done a good job in ERs in this country to isolate those people coming in with high fevers from those areas. I want to thank my guest. This is ER 101. I'm Dr. Lee Van Oker on Radio MD. Stay well.